It's planting season, at least for those growing things like summer squash, beans, and cherry tomatoes. And we're seeing a change. Rather than buy already developed seedlings, which are more expensive, many gardeners are buying seed packets. It's a sign they want to start their gardens from scratch. And seed companies say they've seen an increase in orders since the economic downturn. Reporter Sasha Woodruff reports that it is easy to read the directions on these seed envelopes. The hard part is following them.
Rectangular dirt beds of chard and kale sit alongside trees filled with immature fruit in the community garden off busy Venice Boulevard in West Los Angeles. In the middle of the garden is a classroom, and that's where Molly Wine sits with a handful of students learning how to coax a seed into a full-grown plant. A black thumb has plagued her for a long time.
Yeah, I've been killing tomatoes, herbs, I kill it all. This is my first time actually learning how to do it right.
At the front of the classroom, Master Gardener Nancy Mills stands shaking a packet of radish seeds.
We hear seeds, here. But what do we know about seeds? And what do we do when we buy the packet?
Now, this may seem obvious, but Mills tells her students reading and following the instructions is key. People often get seduced by the images of voluptuous tomatoes or girthy eggplants, but Mills says they forget to space and water according to the directions. Too much bright sun can shrivel the fledgling plant, but overwatering does the exact same thing.
That means once you put the seed in the soil, it's 4 to 10 days before you will see the first two leaves.
Seeds are finicky creatures, but they have a charm that commercially grown plants just can't produce. Also in the classroom is 27-year-old Ben Adlin. He's inspired by rare vegetables gardeners can only find in seed catalogs.
There's more than one type of cucumber, which is something that I feel like I've only learned since trying to buy seeds and not just going to the supermarket.
Some of those less common varieties? German Schmorgerken, Indian Yellow, and Japanese Climbing. Adlin has also acquired a taste for rarer bean varieties like Good Mother Stollard and Rio Zape.
The more boutique-y type of beans are going to set you back like $14.99 a pound at some crazy, you know, health food store. Whereas, like, you buy a bean, you put it in the ground, it's kind of fun to watch this dinosaur crawl out of the earth.
A seed packet usually costs a couple of dollars and yields dozens of plants. By contrast, a couple dollars gets you only one seedling. So there's an economic appeal in addition to the culinary allure. Renee Shepherd has been selling seeds through catalogs and online for more than a quarter of a century. When she started, her business focused on flowers. Now vegetables make up a bigger part.
I have seen in the last few years, particularly since the beginning of the Great Recession, a tremendous change in the kinds of seed we sell. In fact, we sell 30% more vegetables than we did, say, 5 years ago.
Doesn't it smell wonderful?
It should.
The loam.
Oh, the loam. Feel the loam. It also depends on
which seed. It's so soft.
Back in the community garden, students are planting radish, chard, and bean seeds inside a cut-up milk carton. They water the soil, and even Molly Wine, with her black thumb, is optimistic.
I have high hopes for this garden. Actually, paying attention makes a big difference.
With a little time and patience, those seeds will take root. For NPR News, I'm Sasha Woodruff.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. You can find some fruits, like apples, in just about any grocery store in the country, but other fruits have gotten a bit lost in today's food business. Unlike their sweet counterparts, sour cherries are too fragile to ship far, and that means most people never get to taste a fresh one. Instead, they end up in that iconic American dessert, the cherry pie. Well, today we can report that the humble sour cherry is in the middle of an unlikely renaissance. NPR's Dan Charles explains.
Tart cherry juice is now showing up in health food stores as a nutrient-packed superfood. There are studies, many paid for, it must be noted, by the Cherry Marketing Institute, showing that this sour sweet fruit can help reduce insomnia or pain in joints and muscles. Researcher Mitchell Seymour at the University of Michigan Medical School fed tart cherries to rats.
And we saw some significant reductions in things like inflammation in the animals. We saw some improved insulin resistance.
If all this research gives the tart cherry business a boost, Seymour is happy to see it.
I think it's exciting. I think it's a good product, and it's nice to know that a majority of that product is produced in my home state of Michigan.
In fact, the western edge of his home state, along the shores of Lake Michigan, grows something like three-quarters of the country's sour cherries with their addicting counterpoint of tangy and sweet, perfect for baking. And this year, the orchards are looking great. Mike Van Ackmel's farm, near the town of Hart, is a sea of white blossoms, shimmering in the sunlight.
I mean, how's it getting better than this out here today? There's nothing I'd rather be growing than tart cherries and apples. You know, that's what I told my wife. If I was to die tomorrow, you know, there's nothing that I could ask for, even after going through a year like we did last year.
Last year was no good at all. It started with a deceptively mild spring.
It was real warm early. Just everything was way advanced.
The trees blossomed, and then
23rd of March, got a real cold night.
Van Ackmel stayed up that whole night watching the thermometer.
It got about 3:30, and temperature just started dropping, and it didn't matter what we did. It kept dropping and dropping.
The blossoms froze. The crop was ruined. Now, there's a reason why all those trees bloomed and froze in unison. The vast majority of tart cherry trees in the U.S. are genetically identical, but they don't have to be. There's a world of different kinds of tart cherries out there in their homeland of Eastern Europe, and one scientist, Amy Iazzoni at Michigan State University, is bringing some of that diversity to the United States.
Somebody needs to do this.
Iazzoni is in a hurry. She has to be this time of year. Her tart cherry trees are blooming, ready for pollination. Iazzoni reaches for a blossom, and suddenly her hands slow down. She gently pulls away part of the flower, the pollen-producing part. She throws that away. She wants to fertilize this flower with pollen from another tree.
Did you see how that worked? This is how we prepare the branch for pollen.
Iazzoni is the country's one and only tart cherry breeder. When she took this job in 1981, she wasn't exactly sure where to start. The only tart cherries she could find were from America's standard commercial variety, Montmorency. But a cherry breeder needs different kinds of cherry trees to make those genetic crosses, reshuffling the genes and creating new combinations. A plant breeder with just one variety is like a painter with only one color.
I got to see Montmorency and Montmorency and Montmorency. So, okay, spring comes. What am I going to cross it with? I have nothing. Well, I should go to Eastern Europe. And can I get there and back before my bloom? And I could. I did it.
This was during the Cold War. An iron curtain stood between her and those tart cherry varieties. But Iazzoni got official permission to cross through it, and she followed the tart cherry bloom northward across Europe from Yugoslavia to Poland. She collected pollen all the way and brought it back to fertilize blossoms in Michigan. Along the way, she also got a taste of a whole different tart cherry culture. In Hungary, for instance, tart cherry trees line village streets.
Their tart cherries are so good, they eat them fresh. And I actually have seen in Hungary the price of tart cherries higher than sweet cherries.
More trips followed. Today, 30 years later, Iazzoni's breeding orchard is a spectacular exhibition of the tart cherry's family tree. There are short bushes and tall trees. Perhaps most interesting right now, there are trees that were not bothered by last spring's freeze.
This is Tamaris from Mitrinsk, Russia.
It's a modest little tree. It stands out because it's a really late bloomer.
Montmorency has pretty much finished blooming, and this thing just sits there.
Last year, this tree didn't bloom during the warm early spring, so there were no blossoms to freeze during the cold snap. It bloomed later and produced its normal crop of cherries. Now, those cherries aren't very good, so Amy Iazzoni is doing more cross-pollinating, mating this tree with others that do make nice cherries, collecting the seeds, then planting them. Right now, she's waiting to collect pollen from some of that next generation, especially the little trees that are blooming really late.
See?
Little buds coming.
Little flowers. Those are what we're anxiously waiting for.
What she hopes to get, eventually, is a late-blooming tart cherry tree that yields a big crop of great-tasting cherries. But this is just a part of her bigger project, introducing more variety into the tart cherry landscape, trees and flavors that might even change the image and culture of tart cherries in America. Dan Charles, NPR News.